going back to another brick on the ball. Ugh.
I like it.
Going back.
Another brick on your balls. It's a different type of album. It's a
very different podcast. It's
a different type of struggle.
This is the Epic New Podcast, Two Idiots and a List, where you're going to get two idiots and a list. And now, coming to you live from Circle Avenue Studios, your hosts, Nick Fasolo and Keurig McMillan.
Hey, welcome again to another episode of Two Idiots and a List. Thanks for sticking with us. Sorry for the delayed release, but life seems to keep getting in the way. Oh, well, what you going to do? Be patient with us. You may see us again in a month, month and a half, 2 months. We'll try to keep it as consistent as we can, but no promises. I am here, as always, with my co-host, Nick Fasolo.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us. Like Keurig said, you know, things started opening up more. Life just gets a little bit more busy, and we try to do this in between our full-time jobs as male models, and it's just, sometimes it gets in the way.
Do we have any new towns that you'd like to welcome to the program?
349 different towns that we've been heard in all over the world. And I do want to give a shout out to Milford, Ohio. Stop by the Copper Blue Grub Shack and get a wedge salad there. They're known for their wedge salads. They feature it prominently on their website.
I love wedge salad.
Looks like a guy we know.
We would also like to welcome some new listeners from Ukraine, Guatemala, and Panama. That's right, Panama.
But Panama's a car. I thought we discussed that on the Van Halen's.
Listen to Van Halen, and then make sure you let Nick know what you think of his opinion of Eddie Van Halen.
Reddit is a cruel beast.
Oof. Also, we're seeing a really strong following from Brazil. And to you, we say, hola e bem-vindo. I'm sure I slaughtered that, but hello and welcome to you all.
Is that the Portuguese version?
That is Portuguese for hello and welcome to you all.
Just want to make sure we're culturally relevant.
Finally, you can leave us a voicemail if you so desire through our service provider. Just Google Anchor Podcasts and search for us, and you'll find the option to leave us a message. To our listener, John, who listened to our Madonna episode, we very much appreciate the kind comments and that you're going to share our show with others. You even went so far as to call us professional, and that's damn kind of you.
That's stretching it.
And also, John, for you, sir, we will try to keep the anti-Catholic rhetoric to a minimum. All right. Make sure your bong water is fresh, kids, because today we're talking about Pink Floyd. Nick, what's your first memory of Pink Floyd?
Oh, my God. So when we first put Pink Floyd on the calendar, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, obviously, they're a huge part of the, like, my musical landscape. But then I started getting into, I mean, it's like, there's a lot here. Like, I did not realize they had begun, like, Roger Waters started this all the way back in 63.
Yes.
Like, they predate the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, and I think the full band with Waters, Sid Barrett, Nick Mason, Richard Wright, I believe that their official sort of start date was 65.
Yeah.
And then Gilmore joined in 67, and poor Sid Barrett had to leave the band in 68.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Sid Barrett. That's a really sad...
Yeah.
Like, he's a lot... Like, he caught the shrapnel for that whole generation, I feel.
Yeah,
like,
I think...
Everybody, like, doing the psychedelic drugs that they were on. Sid Barrett really... Like, he took the hit for everyone.
I think the healthcare system failed him. I think the world's knowledge of mental disease failed him. It sounded like he suffered from multiple issues, some of which were influenced by the quantity and potency of the LSD he was taking, I'm sure. At least that's what some of the stuff that I read indicated. But I think in general, he got fucked.
Yeah, I think you're right. Also about the awareness of mental health. And, you know, certainly he was dealing with some other issues there. But, I mean, like, they were reporting, like, he was dosing 24 hours a day for, like, 7 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're going to wormhole your brain a little bit there. But to remain catatonic and just kind of, like, in that state has just got to be, like, just... I mean, because he didn't die too long ago, right?
No, I want to say it was within the last 10 years.
Yeah, like,
lived with his mother in Cambridge.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a bummer.
Yeah. Barrett was a huge influence on this band well after he left. A lot of the music that they made was dedicated to him, and he was still alive. Barrett actually came up with the name. He had albums from blues musicians Pink Anderson and Floyd Council, and that's where the name came from.
I love it.
Right?
One of the great rock and roll band names. The Syd Barrett thing, it almost kind of plays into like this Roger Waters life as well. I mean, think of what this guy went through. His father died when he was 5 months old in the war, in World War II. After being, you know, professing to be, you know, a conscientious objector, then he changed his mind on a lot of things, and then he actually went into the service, and then it was subsequently killed, you know, and so Roger Waters grew up without a father, and then his best friend abandons him in one way or another, and just, you know, you can see it just war and you know, fame and popularity colored his entire, you know, vision of what this art that he was going to produce is. And it's, you know, for better or worse, and mostly of it was, you know, some of the best music that we've, you know, had the pleasure to have.
Yeah, absolutely. There were two businessmen who originally discovered Pink Floyd, which at the time was called the T-Set. Great name for a British
band. Of course
band,
it is.
Right? These two businessmen believed that Barrett was the creative genius behind Pink Floyd. And when Barrett separated from the band, the two businessmen followed Barrett.
Good for them.
Which good really, choice. Really unfortunate business decision.
I mean, all those niceties aside, I have here on my timeline, from 1963 to 1972, I have two words, not interested. Just not interested. There's better stuff. Like, if you're looking for psychedelic rock, there's better stuff going on there. If you're looking for progressive rock, there's better stuff going on there. They just didn't have it put together.
No, it sounded like you should be surfing, possibly while tripping, you know,
yeah,
on their early stuff.
Surfing on that, you know.
Surfing on acid.
Yeah, exactly.
It had that feel to it. It had that early...
It's a niche market.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. I'm not so sure how niche, though.
It's tough to carry a boombox when you're on a surfboard.
But after, of course, then, like in 1973, Dark Side of the Moon is produced and recorded, and you know, here we go.
Yeah, and history is made.
Here we go.
Sure.
724 consecutive weeks on the Billboard.
Insane.
And they have 950 total weeks total.
Right.
It recharted. It's like 20 fucking years on the charts.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Like, they will never be touched. I didn't even bother looking up who is like the second in line.
I had a hard time tracking some of that data because some of it dealt with whether it was verified sales or not, and they weren't verifying all the sales back then. Now everything's verified, so you can find like three different versions, and one of them had them at like number four all time, and then another one had them at 25, so I discounted it.
So you've got Dark Side of the Moon, and it rockets them into superstardom.
Right.
The stuff that arguably they were not ready for. They were a progressively rock band, and like they knew kind of where they're... you know, their festivals were going to be.
Sure.
And then Dark Side of the Moon hits, and they just hit this vein, and they went to superstardom, right? Incidentally, did you see who the engineer was on?
I did. Alan Parsons.
I love Alan
of
Parsons.
Of the Alan Parsons Project.
And like, all, like even like, what is it, On the Run, the second track of
Dark Side, of,
Dark Side of the Moon. It's Alan Parsons all over.
Absolutely.
Like, it's right, like yeah. That is...
It's like, in that vein.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think they played that for the Bulls in the 1990s. Their introductory was On the Run, and then they go into...
it's Alan Parsons' song, Can You Read My Mind, the instrumental intro.
I'm like,
Parsons also worked as an engineer on Abbey Road and Let It Be by the Beatles.
Yeah, some good chops there.
Yeah, right.
Then he went on to make, you know.
Can you read my mind?
We're not going to do an Alan Parsons part. But don't answer me. Don't sleep on that song. That song is great.
It's great.
Great video, and I know you've never seen it.
I have not. I'm not even sure that's the name of the song, but I just remember that's the lyric from the song. So.
Don't answer me. All right, it's not a Parsons podcast.
Well, and these guys, you know, in their very early years, they had a recurring gig at a bar in London where they would play 3 90-minute sets. That's 4.5 hours of music. And they didn't want to repeat songs. So they realized they could stretch the songs out by adding solos and secondary solos and then big, long instrumental introductions. And that's the birth of what you hear on many of these albums, which are these songs that are in depth. There's a lot of introduction on some of them. Some of them cut right into it. But, you know, you can see it, that footprint on their music.
Well, Roger Waters, like... There should be a rule in music. Nobody but Roger Waters is allowed to do a concept album.
Right.
Period. So in 73, Dark Side of the Moon is a concept album. And then Wish You Were Here is their concept album for Syd Barrett. Animals, I'm not into it, but it was also a concept album.
Right.
You know, different animals, songs, whatever. And then The Wall. Mm-hmm. And then when he leaves, when Waters leaves, like he does what I think is one of the greatest is concept albums is Radio Chaos.
Radio Chaos, sure.
87. But in between that, like you got Rush in the studio making 2112. Like somebody should have gone into Rush and say, hey guys, we're done with the concept albums, all right? Like let's not even give it a shot.
Don't disparage 2112.
Can we please? And you can just see those guys like, I think we really got something here. It's all coming together. Stop.
Their Canadian accents, it sounded oddly British.
So I'm mixing metaphors here.
You know, there was a couple of things that caught my eye. In another fantastic example of a band getting screwed, they were playing Soldier Field here in Chicago. And for those of you not from Chicago, Soldier Field is where the Chicago Bears play. It holds, what, 60,000, 65,000 fans?
Something like that.
The promoter told them that the show was sold out, which would have been, actually, here's 67,000 tickets sold. Something occurred to them that made them think that something was off with that. So they hired a helicopter and a photographer, and they took a shot from the air. This photographer took a shot from the air, and the attendance appeared to be much closer to 95,000. They hired an attorney, and it turned out that by discounting the amount from 95 to 67,000, it shorted Pink Floyd by $2.7 million in today's dollars.
Just for that one show.
Just for that one show. So the promoter was selling more tickets and then telling them that, you know, well, we've reached capacity, so you can't expect any more than 67,000. There's a photo of it. Of the crowd, and they are absolutely packed into the stadium. So once we air this episode, I'll put something on Facebook so you can see it. It doesn't look like fun. They are absolutely just like, butts to nuts.
And it just and you know the amount of tripping going on in those crowds.
Oh, like, yeah.
And what percentage of trips are bad.
Right. Like, and you're like a sardine in a can.
Fuck that. Ah,
get me out of here.
No, thank you, man.
Oh, man.
It's like hell's waiting room.
I have a sort of a random story for Floyd that doesn't really have to do with the band itself, but for some reason I felt the need to share this. So in a previous band I was in, we practiced at a storage space. There were a number of other bands who practiced there. It was a big storage space, climate controlled, so you could play there year round. And one day we were there and we heard Pink Floyd coming really loudly and clearly. And my first thought was like, wow, those guys have a killer sound system. They must just be sitting there listening to Floyd and, you know, hanging out. It turns out it was a Floyd tribute band, and they were that good.
Awesome.
They were that good that you couldn't really tell the difference between them and the album. At some point after that, our band broke up, and the drummer and I teamed up to find another project. So I told myself I wouldn't be in another cover band unless it was a Pink Floyd tribute band, because I like playing their music, and I like their music and whatnot. So I reached out to the band, told them we had broken up, and said, if they happen to be looking for a bassist or a drummer, we were both available. And the guy gets back to me and says, you know what? I'm actually looking for both. Oh, all right, cool. So we meet him for a beer to see if the personalities meshed. And we're chatting for about 5 minutes when he says, hey, full disclosure, I have a felony rap.
You know. No, you gotta be in this music. You know, it's a music business.
Yeah, so,
what kind of felony rap are we talking about?
Well, that's exactly the math I was doing in my head. I really wanted to play in this band. So, I'm in a microsecond, I start trying to justify various felonies, right? You know, I'm thinking, it's insurance fraud. Okay, not a big deal.
Wire fraud, too.
Maybe it's a trunk full of weed or a little cyber crime or something. You know, I'm okay with that. You know what? I could even maybe justify, manslaughter if this guy got into a drunken bar fight and things went south. So I asked him, I'm like, well, what's the felony? And he said, child pornography.
Check, please. Check. Can I get the check here before I'm in a band?
My face fell like I had Bell's palsy. Just sank right off my face and into my lap.
Like a cartoon, like a little puff of smoke. Just gone.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the guy was like, I downloaded a terabyte of porn. And in some of the files, there was apparently pictures of children, which I didn't know about. He said he couldn't afford to fight it anymore. And so he was taking a plea deal in order to...
A terabyte?
A terabyte.
And this was long. This was at least a decade ago, right?
This was probably 6 or 7 years. Yeah, 6 years ago, something like that.
What did the guy have? It's like Cray X15 computers in his basement running off fucking government servers?
Liquid cooled.
He's got the Mission Impossible stuff that Bing Rames wanted.
Right. Yeah, he said, I'll be out in a few months and then we'll get things started again.
Out?
Right?
He was going to jail?
He was going to prison.
Good.
He took a plea deal and he was going to prison. He's like, I'll be out in a few months and we'll get things started up again. And it occurred to me, no wonder you need a drummer and a bass player. You told your last band what happened and they all fucking left. Oh, Jesus. I was crushed. It was awful.
Crushed.
It was awful. I really wanted to be in that band.
Oh, I'm glad you have your boundaries.
I think you went first last time, so maybe maybe I shall start.
There's a lot of shit. This was. I looked at this and I really had a hard time with all this. And I think we're going to have a discussion, a serious discussion.
Well, I think you're right. I think there's a lot to choose from relative to this band. They got a big catalog. It changed a lot over the years. And I had a difficult time with it. And I think my choices are probably going to piss off the Redditors. So heads up, guys. You may not like what I came up
with. Warm up them fingers.
That's right. Get your typing finger ready. All right. So to the honorable mention. You've already mentioned this album, actually. The album is Animals. I'm a big fan of this album. And the song that has made my honorable mention is Pigs, Three Different Ones. This is a long song. It's 11 minutes, but I really dig the chorus. You know, he sings, ha ha, Sherrod, you are. And it just kind of hits me well. There's a repeating riff on the guitar in this song that catches me. And during the solos, it's a good song. That Waters is writing, is using pigs to reference people in power who he doesn't agree with. There's some debate over two of the three pigs as to who they are. But one of them is pretty strongly identified as a hard right-wing British activist named Mary Whitehouse, who regularly battled against anything that she felt posed a threat to her beliefs. And she was kind of out there. She thought that television coverage of the Vietnam War fostered pacifism.
That's a stretch.
If people see violence, they're not going to want us to go to war anymore. So maybe we ought to just hide.
Yeah, perish the thought.
Right?
I mean, what the...
She fought against Chuck Berry's My Ding-a-ling and Alice Cooper's School's Out. And
My Ding-a-ling. It's the best.
Right?
No, it's about my dick. Yeah. In case you didn't know.
That's exactly what I'm singing about. She actually succeeded in getting Alice Cooper's song removed from Britain's Top of the Pops TV show. So she had some influence, and Waters clearly wasn't a fan.
I'm fine with Roger Waters, most of his political stances. Anytime he wants to take a swipe at the conservatives, I'm all for it. I mean, I'm here for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and he does it pretty regularly. I saw him in 2019 or 2018, I think it was. And boy, yeah, he dedicated a fair amount of that concert to taking pot shots at
Was
Trump.
That the Wall tour?
No, this was the one after that where he was doing a lot of stuff off of Animals and Metal, and he did some stuff off of Dark Side.
I saw the Wall tour, not in person, but I saw it on whatever it is, Axis or whatever,
right,
television show. I mean, man, that's a fucking production.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
It's really cool. I mean, that's them, like that production, Muse puts on a show similar. U2 has also put on shows similar to that, and it's like, that's a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You get your money's worth it.
You do. And it's not cheap. But,
it's really cool.
But it's worth it.
It's really fucking cool. It's worth it. Like B-52s flying over the stadium. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's right, something cool. else. Yeah, in a twist for this band, Gilmore plays bass on the song and Waters plays rhythm guitar. I like this song a lot, so...
All right, Animals, the whole album, I just summed it up with not into it. And I think that, like, this episode might kind of more clearly be more distinct in what you care for and what I care
sure.
for, because it is not Van Halen, Van Hagar.
No.
Like, it is Roger Waters, Pink Floyd, and then it is David Gilmour's Pink Floyd.
It absolutely
is.
They are very different, very different animals.
So I think it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. So my honorable, we're done?
Yep.
My honorable mention is I'm taking the whole of Radio Chaos as the concept album is, because it, like all of his shit, you really can't break it apart. It takes away a lot of the meanings if you just took one song out of you know, Dark Side or out of this album. And if you haven't heard it, and I don't know if you've ever
heard
the whole album, it is, again, like, for the concept, like, he's the best one at it. Like, it is such a great, you know, what the Cold War does to humanity, what the Cold War did to humanity. And, you know, this is 87, so you're right in the middle of kind of like Glasnost, and it's like, you know, we're starting to try to mend fences with the Russians. But, you know, he is a man who has been scarred by geopolitics.
Sure.
All of his life from his, you know, from when he was 5 months old. He is taking a very raw look at, you know, the Cold War and the coldness of, you know, the weapons that we have built, and just like, you know, it doesn't matter. And at the end of that the last track is like, when, I won't spoil it for anybody, but the last track is just kind of like, was it all worth it?
Right.
It's really good. I mean, it's really, I was stunned when I was introduced to it when I was in a senior in high school, when I was away from, you know, my mates, right? And I moved to a brand new high school, and I met this one kid, and this one kid drove me to back and forth to school every day. He had Radio Chaos in his car. We listened to it every morning, and I'm like, who is this? And he showed me the thing. I'm like, oh, shit, I like this.
Yeah.
And I listened to the whole thing and you know, the whole lyrics, and I'm like, it's heavy, it's deep, and it really affected, like, us as far as, you know, we're about 50 years old right now. We lived through the height of the real terror of the Cold War, which was nuclear obliteration, that fucking nightmare that they made us watch for school. What was it called?
I don't remember.
The Day After.
Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, right. You were mandated to watch it. I didn't watch it, but you were mandated to watch it. It just showed you basically this Armageddon, you know, facing humanity.
I remember the fallout shelters that we had in school.
Nuclear fallout shelters
in school. Crazy. All right, my number five. I am going to the album Metal, and I'm going with the song Fearless. There's a really simple blues groove in this song that rolls through it repeatedly, and it's super catchy. I used to play with a guitarist who, when we were talking about a riff that got stuck in your head, he called it sticky, and I thought that was a pretty good description for this too. And it's just a simple scale-up riff, but it's great. There's not a whole lot to this song. It's been on my playlist for years, and the song actually opens and closes with a group of Liverpool football fans singing "You'll Never Walk Alone," which it sounds like a pretty typical European soccer game, and you know, that kind of a crowd. So at the very end of the song, they start going into a chant. That's my number five.
Good deal. My number five is going to kind of exclamate what I was just talking about. It's like, so you started at the very beginning. I'm starting all the way at the very end.
Okay.
And so my number five is off of the Division Bell, and it's Take It Back. I love David Gilmour's voice. I love his phrasing of his guitar. I love the way that he always uses this chorus of background vocals to punctuate his own chorus lines. And this is a great example of it. I really like this song a lot. And Division Bell is 94?
94-ish, yeah. Like yeah. I love that song. Yeah. I like that album a lot. That was, so I saw that tour.
Okay.
And I've seen a fair number of concerts. I hate to say a lot, because I know people that have seen... Well, we know a guy that's seen probably 150,
right.
149 of which were the Grateful Dead.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I've probably seen, I don't know, maybe 60, maybe 70,
oh,
I don't know.
It's got to be more than that. I think I've seen 60.
Well, then it may have been, I don't know. But this is, hands down, my favorite concert I've ever seen.
No shit.
Yeah. Hands down.
Wow.
It was fantastic.
I'd like to see Gilmour play.
Oh, it was live. It was at Soldier Field, and they didn't sell it to 90,000 or whatever the hell. But it was sort of drizzling rain. It had rained torrentially earlier for hours that day.
It's the only way to see a show like that.
Yeah, right, with some rain. And so we get to Soldier Field, and Soldier Field's got gravel parking lots, and there's, you know, lake-sized puddles. And this one guy was doing a whippet. For some reason, he decided to do it with his heels backed up against the edge of this puddle. Took a whole lungful of this thing, passed out, the balloon, you know, blew away, and he does the Nestea plunge backwards into this filthy water. And I'm assuming that the rest of the show was a bit uncomfortable for him. But
something tells me that he probably wasn't feeling a whole
lot of that. I don't think it mattered to him. But they were playing, I think it was Comfortably Numb. They had a disco ball the size of my living room. and they hit it with a bunch of lasers. And so as they were playing Comfortably Numb, these lasers hit it, and it had started to drizzle. So you have all these raindrops hitting the rays and lasers. Yeah. You could just kind of hear this collective, like, whoa.
That's pretty cool.
I love Take It Back. I think that's got a great guitar solo in it. It has a really, really cool...
intro is cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what instrument that is or what it is, but it's a really neat effect on whatever instrument it is. It's really cool.
All right, that brings us to my number four. And my number four is Time. There's an oddly reggae kind of feel to this song. I don't have much other than to say that there's just the way this song comes together really works for me. The lyrics are
just great lyrics.
Oh, they're timeless.
It's awesome.
And you run and you run to catch up with the sun, but it's sinking, racing around to come up behind you again.
Yeah, it's so cool.
It's fantastic. It really is.
I mean, so this is the prog that I'm here for.
Yeah,
I'm not here for J.R.R. Tolkien prog, you know. I'm here for like that type of stuff,
right?
Like, and Rot Waters, like he tapped into the anxiety of the age,
yeah,
and was able to communicate it perfectly, just perfectly. And all of his, you know, Dark Side, Wish You Were Here, The Wall, just all of them.
Right.
He's so brilliant with his lyrics. Like, and Gilmour's, don't sleep on him either. He's good,
mm-hmm.
But this song Time is just.
It's really
fucking phenomenal.
It's really amazing. Really amazing. All right, what do you have for number four?
Okay, so my number four is, again, going on the Gilmour side of things, on The Turning Away. Using what you will find the strange, mesmerized as they light the flame, feel the new wind of change on the wings of the night. I'm a big ballad guy, I guess. So I'm starting to listen to other the other podcasts that we've done. It's like I'm huge on ballads because I appreciate really, really good lyrics, which is why Floyd is one of my favorite bands too, because they just know how to turn a phrase.
Well, you have sniped me on this one as well, and you sniped me all the way to the top.
All the way to the top? Then go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I didn't mean to step on.
This is where I was saying that I think the Redditors may get a little feisty about something like on
they
the.
They can make their own fucking podcast. We're not here for them.
No, I love this. I love this song, and this was almost more of a like a. I don't know, like, it was, obviously they're all sentimental things. You wouldn't pick something for any other reason, but Momentary Lapse of Reason was one of the first Floyd albums that I had. And I think that album is fucking great. As you said, as you said in a previous episode, that album fucks.
Yeah, that album is one of my favorites for sure.
So that album starts off with like an instrumental track, and then it bounces into Learning to Fly, Dogs of War, and then One Slip. And all three of those are fantastic. Even the instrumental track's not bad.
I love the instrumental track.
Right.
Water.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And then the discombobulating, fluty sounding.
Yeah.
Whatever he's doing over there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's really cool.
And then you get to the fifth track, and it's this grandiose song that has Gilmour's fingerprints all over it.
Mm-hmm.
It's been called a protest song. I'm not clear exactly what he's protesting. My interpretation was poverty. But you could swap that for just about any negative human condition, and the song still makes sense. You know, he says, don't accept that what's happening is just a case of others suffering, or you'll find that you're joining in the turning away.
Yeah.
Kind of a cool message that they put there. And Waters is now out of the game. So Waters did not write the lyrics on this, and Waters was the primary lyricist throughout most, if not almost all of the previous albums prior. So this is, and I forgot to look up whether it was Gilmore that wrote it or that wrote the lyrics or if it was somebody else. But
yeah, they started their legal troubles in 84.
Yeah.
And that was it.
And this was 87?
87 was Momentary Lapse, and 87 is also Radio Chaos.
Yeah.
So he was off doing his other project, and they were doing theirs.
Yeah, and they were battling over who got to use the name Floyd. Right. This is a fantastic guitar solo. While he's soloing, the song goes into double time, which is kind of cool. Like, he starts playing, and they're doing the rhythm that the song started with, and about halfway through the solo, it kicks into twice the speed, and he just keeps soloing, and the song fades out while he's soloing. This is an awesome song to hear live.
I bet.
Oh, it is. They played it at Soldier Field, sure. And it was just, oh, man, it just made you, give you goose flesh.
Look, mommy, I have goose flesh.
Yeah, and this whole album is, you know, it was released in 87, and it sounds like it was released in 87.
That's what's so great about it.
It is pure mid-late 80s. There's even a twirly alto sax in the song Terminal Frost. And I rather like it.
Not bad. Again, T to B. Great stuff. Or my new one, Root to Fruit. Like that better?
Ah, that's good.
I've been workshopping that. My team of writers I have back here.
Boy, did we up our budget for this?
Well, I need the help.
All right, my number three. I am going to the Division Bell. And I am going with What Do You Want From Me? This song has some special meaning to me because when I was in college, I studied abroad in Cambridge, England. And while I was in Cambridge, I got a job as a bartender at a pub that you yourself have been to.
I loved it. The County Arms?
The County Arms.
Right?
Yes.
Down the street from the Pickerel.
That's right.
Where Isaac Newton, right?
Yep.
Where Isaac Newton used to drink.
That's right.
A fantastic city.
Yeah. The landlord of the pub did not like the other music that I wanted to play. I wanted to play Allman Brothers and B.B. King and stuff like that. And he didn't think that that was good for his clientele. But he did approve The Division Bell by Floyd. So I would listen to it kind of over and over and over again because I really liked the album. And that song, What Do You Want From Me, whenever it came on, it just kind of gave me this sort of groovy swoon behind the bar, and I'd be pumping out pints, you know, singing along to What Do You Want From Me.
That's a cool story. Well, those boys are from Cambridge, right?
Gilmore and Barrett were, I believe.
Yeah.
And their sax player, the sax player who played on, you know, a couple of their albums.
And then Waters moved in and that's where they met or something like that.
I read that
Cambridge was a place where they kind of haunted.
Yeah. And actually, a Division Bell, this was news to me, a Division Bell is a bell used in British Parliament to signify that a vote is taking place and members have 8 minutes to get their votes in.
Just eight.
That's all they're giving you.
There you go.
And apparently many of the surround, you know, around Parliament in London, many of the surrounding restaurants, shops, and pubs have their own division bells, which are connected to the official one. So if you're sitting there getting blotto in the middle of the day and you forgot that you were supposed to be at a vote.
You know, that's tradition. That's the kind of British culture that we look for.
The expectation is that you're going to get blotto in the middle of the day.
That's right.
So you can hop up, you know, drop a few quid on the bar, and run inside and cast your vote before you lose your turn.
That's how the sausage gets made.
That's right. All right, what do you got for three?
All right, so number three, I had to do a little gerrymandering around here. We're leading up to this conversation that we have to have, but so I'm moving things around, and my number three is learning to fly.
How can I escape this irresistible grasp? Can't keep my eyes from the circling sky. Tongue-tied and twisted, just an earthbound misfit.
Now, I really, really love this song. And you know, of course, it's off a Momentary Lapse of Reason. You just talked about it. Everything about this song is just like big sounds. Big sounds.
Yeah.
And I think that Gilmore's voice on this track is like ghostly almost. It's really cool. And the lyrics are just... The coolest part of is like the interlude, and I guess we'll get to the coolest 4 seconds, but the interlude in the middle of the song,
sure,
where it's got the radio voice happening or the squawk box happening, and then he goes into like this pre-chorus thing. Fucking banger. Just a great song.
I love everything about it. I love that too. Like I said earlier, those first five songs on that album are really dynamite. Really, really good. All right, well, that brings us to our fantasy concert lineup.
Okay. You're going to go?
Sure.
Go for it.
I would say if you are a fan of Pink Floyd, this is just sort of a helpful recommendation. If you're a fan of Pink Floyd and you want more of that kind of sound, something similar to that from a modern band, check out the band Porcupine Tree. It's they're very much along these same lines, maybe a little more mathematical, but pretty good. Anyhow, who would I see Pink Floyd with today? I'm going to have to go with Blue Oyster Cult. Oh,
wow, man.
And yeah,
what?
I want the umlaut over the O. You can either do a little Burning For You Fear the Reaper.
For you, yeah.
I was leaning towards Burning For You. You know, Fear the Reaper got overplayed at the SNL sketch, but
man.
My brother-in-law always used to sing, I'm Burning a Mule, which I rather like. And then, you know, for the second band of that, let's go with little Ian Anderson with his flute and give me a little Jethro Tull.
Okay.
Sitting on the park.
Concert, man.
Sitting on a park bench.
I'm just thinking about that shitty song. What is it? Walking through the. That's whatever you say. There is way too much Jethro Tull in my life for about 9 months, and I don't know who to blame for that. It wasn't me.
I'm not sure I want to give them like a full hour and a half or even 45 minutes. You know, you play Locomotive Breath and then get off the stage.
Right. And Locomotive Breath.
we're pretty good to
That's
go.
That's awesome. Jethro Tull. So I do want to make a comment here. We should start to talk because I think we might have repeated. I think a new rule going forward should be like you can't pick a band of in this section of a band that you've already mentioned before.
Right, and I'm also I'm also trying to pick bands that I haven't seen before. So when we talked about
the big Jethro Tull guy,
well,
hey, Aqualung.
when we talked about Alice in Chains, I said sound. I said Audio Slave instead of Soundgarden. It's because I've already seen Soundgarden.
All right, so. Fair enough.
There you go.
Show off. All right, so I got very specific on this, and I'm keeping it all in the family this time around. I got to see that Pink Floyd wall show.
Yeah.
I have to.
Yeah.
That's a great fucking show. And then I also want to see him, Roger Waters, doing Radio Chaos. Because
I like
he
that.
Toured on that for just a small time because it just did not gain the traction or popularity he thought he was. But I would want to see that.
I wonder how much that got hurt by the fact that he couldn't call himself Pink Floyd.
I think a lot. I think a lot because I, you know, I certainly knew who, like I had Momentary Lapse of Reason, but it, you know, Chaos is out at the same time and I didn't have that.
Right.
Until somebody popped it, you know, in front of my face.
It certainly didn't make the headlines or, you know, get into our jet stream.
Right. And then I want to see the Delicate Sound of Thunder tour.
Ooh.
You know, remember that the live album set that they put out?
Yeah.
That whole set list has Comfortably Numb, has all the good hits from, you know, Dark Side and Wish You Were Here, and it has all the good stuff from Momentary Lapse of Reason.
Yeah.
That live album, that double live album, Delicate Sound of Thunder, is really probably one of the best, along with A Show of Hands.
Oh, Rush. Well, I love it when you admit to loving my band.
It is a great album. I agree with that. It starts off with the Three Stooges, but let's move on.
All right, that brings us to our number twos.
Okay.
For our number twos, I am going back to Dark Side of the Moon, right. And I'm going with Us and Them.
So this is your number two, and I just want to, so because I've already taken your number one.
Okay.
So you don't have any selections left.
You are correct.
Right. So I want to talk to you about this because this is kind of this, as soon as I was going through this list, I'm like, you know what? That Dark Side of the Moon is just a different type of album altogether.
I completely agree.
I really think that Dark Side of the Moon deserves to be in the Pantheon.
So
the whole goddamn album.
I'm going to reserve comment on that until we move through various parts of our episode.
Okay, fair enough. But that's just out there because that's what I feel about Dark Side, which is why I haven't mentioned any Dark Side songs yet. But go ahead, number two, yours is Us and Them.
Us and Them, this was, it's not one of the flashiest songs. It's certainly not the most popular song off of this album. But there's a combination here of this simple, very simple bass groove during the verses, and then you've got Wright sort of tickling the piano as Waters continues to roll that bass line through, and then they get to the choruses, and it's the wall of sound. Like we've talked about the wall of sound. This is the wall of sound. You've got all of these backing vocals, and they were great. And if I showed all my notes here that talked about all the different songs that I had made comments on or that took notes on, so many times I say backing vocals, incredible backing vocals. And it just, they really, really did fill that out nicely. And this song does that. When it gets to that point where they're all singing together and they've got the women singing behind them, it's just power. It's really powerful.
Yeah, it's great. That's also like the great gig in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that woman wailing, and that's just, it's not really a song that you would play on the radio, but it's an integral part of that transition of that album, because it comes in right between Time and Money.
Right.
And it's an integral transition to, you know, what now, why we are all chasing this currency.
Right.
And it's just, it's like, that's, I mean, it's the all of Dark Side is like one giant song. That was the concept.
Yeah.
And that's the concept with all of Waters, you know, a lot of his concepts too. But anyhow, I totally agree. That just a wall of just a wave of sound coming at you. those final vocals is really awesome.
And the story behind that great gig in the sky that you mentioned, her name, the singer's name was Claire Torrey. She had they brought her in to sing this, and they were playing her the recording of I think it's just keyboards that, or maybe Richard Wright wrote the song. I don't remember exactly what's going on while she's singing, but she said she got into the booth and she just let her shit go. She just let it fly. And she came out and she was really embarrassed. And she said, "I'm really sorry. Can I do that all again?" And the band was looking at her stunned, like, you just killed this.
Nailed it.
They paid her, in today's U.S. dollars, the equivalent of $500, which was the rate for hiring a studio musician for that kind of work at the time. Wow. She eventually came back about 20, 25 years later and sued them for a writing credit on that song. Which I think is a pretty fair a pretty fair thing to do, because you've got some other music happening there, but her voice is that song.
Yeah.
And the fact that she did what she did without ever saying a word.
Right.
She doesn't say anything.
And no input from them.
No. She did it all on her own. So she did go after him. They settled out of court, and now after that lawsuit happened, any publication of that song has her name written with it as a, you know, as given a writing credit. So she made some money off of it, I believe, and she should have.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Are we to my second?
We are to your number two.
Okay. Yeah, it just is what it is. Wish You Were Here.
Do you think you can tell? Did they get you to trip?
It's just a great fucking song, and everything about it is great, from the very single, you know, the strike note that comes off of his acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
It's just, everything about it is fucking awesome. And the lyrics, again, are just, you know, two lost souls swimming in a fishbowl.
Right.
Like, year after year.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
It's so relatable. It's kind of like what we talked about with The Doors. Like, this philosophy or this philosophical talk, trying to figure out, like, what this life is for and what this life is about and how do you want to treat other people. It's, like, it's very relatable, right? You know, we've all felt like a lost soul swimming around in a fishbowl, like, year after year.
Yeah.
But the themes are also global, and they are, you know, not nuclear, but they are, like, definitely have shades of war in them, for sure. He names it in the song. It's just great. Waters is really, the way he can, you know, put phrasing together for that stuff is really awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Great song.
The intro is Gilmore on a 12-string guitar, and it's been processed to sound like it's being played, like it's coming through an AM radio.
Yes, and which is also a cool effect.
Yeah. Really, and then cool. Gilmore comes in on an acoustic guitar, and the whole concept is that it's a guitarist playing along with a song on the radio.
So we were visiting a friend of ours, mutual friend of ours at U of I in college, and we had a very long night at the Nature's Table drinking Augsburger dark beer. Listening to
I've been to Nature's Table.
Nature's Table. I think we were 19 at the time. And we it was in the middle of this just the most vicious winter storm that Urbana had seen in years. Just like tornadoes of snow, like rolling across the fucking meadows, right? And so we get back to his dorm. And then we're, you know, we pass out on the dorm room floor.
As one would do,
you know, on top of the laundry. And he... I believe he was down there for a music degree, and so he, of course, his roommate was also a musical I was woken up at 6 o'clock in the morning by this dude playing Wish You Were Here in my ear. Like, the guitar is 4 inches away from my ear, and he's just... And then he's singing to me, and I'm waking up, and I'm like, what is happening here to
Who are
my
you?
Life? Like, why am I listening to this at 6:30 in the morning? Ah, college.
Yeah. No, great song. Gilmore and Waters called it one of Floyd's finest.
Take that, Reddit.
There you go. All right, that brings us to your number one.
All right, so my number one is Comfortably Numb. It is Comfortably Numb because it is the greatest guitar solo recorded. Comfortably Numb.
It's amazing.
Right, both of them. Both the solos, but there you have it. It's and again, the story that is told, the way it's told, it just kind of plods along, it just meanders along, but yet you are enraptured into this. It's like a novel that you're listening to.
Yeah.
You know the history of this person and their pains and their triumphs. It's like, and then he kills it with that fucking solo. It's like, come on. Give everybody else a chance.
Gilmore's amazing talent was to make the guitar sing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he wasn't a shredder.
No.
And what he did wasn't easy. If you listen, and I don't play guitar, I play bass, and they are two different animals. Mm-hmm. But if you listen to what he's doing on that, they're not easy. But he puts this simplicity to it that just makes the guitar absolutely sing.
The phrasing of his solo is... That's what it is. That's what you're talking about. It's not complex. I don't mean to say it's not complex. It's not complex to play, but his phrasing of it, the timing of those notes and when they come in,
sure.
It just makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I can play a good half of portion of that solo, but when it gets, I'm just not that good. But
sure.
But like, there are other guitarists that can do what he does, but it's he came up with it. Like, it's his phrasing.
Yeah.
And any other guitarist would have done it a different way, and it wouldn't have sounded as good, and
No.
just wouldn't have worked for that song.
Yeah.
This thing is perfect. It is a perfect solo, and all deference to Stairway to Heaven, this one is it.
Yeah.
Like, it's awesome.
Right. No, it's amazing. Now imagine seeing it live at Soldier Field with raindrops falling through lasers while there's literally highways of weed traveling around, which, of course, I didn't touch.
No,
Wouldn't be right. All right, then, that brings us to our most hated. Now, you had talked about putting Dark Side of the Moon in the Pantheon.
The Pantheon, all right, let's have it.
And as I was listening to this, and I got to this one point, and I had the same reaction every time I've gotten to it, and the bitch of it is, this is Floyd, and it's a concept album. Dark Side of the Moon is the first side of the album is one song. There is no break.
Right.
The second side of the album is one song. There is no break. By the way, the song on the first song on the A side starts with a heartbeat, and the last song on the B side ends with a heartbeat, for whatever that's worth. Anyhow.
We all took the acid at the same time, right?
I think so. You get out of Us and Them, and you go into Any Color You Like. Go from this velvety, soaring, lyrical chorus of Us and Them into this weird swing beat with kind of acid trip keyboards and weirdly stuttered guitar and drum interactions. And then they roll into Brain Damage, which is incredible. It's like an island of shit in a magic ocean.
But it's Brain Damage. Like, it's the predecessor to Brain Damage. That was the wreck.
I have here, if they intentionally wrote it to create this sort of discomfort, they were successful.
Okay, good.
But because it's a concept album, you can't skip it. You gotta let it just play. Yeah, and I always couldn't wait for that song to end so it would go into Brain Damage. All right. And because of that, I can't call it the perfect album. And that's the hardest thing, because every other song on that album is fucking awesome.
Are you comfortable? Have you sat with this enough?
I have.
I can see the seriousness.
I have. So I might have even rehearsed this speech in the shower. It's entirely possible.
So you've sat with it. I can appreciate that. And I know how much you would want to. It's not you would want this in the Pantheon, but you can't.
I can't put it there.
How about this? So let's compromise.
All right.
I think Comfortably Numb then should be in the Pantheon. Because that we have in the Pantheon The End and Comfortably Numb.
I'm comfortable with that. All right, we've got two songs in the Pantheon, The End by The Doors and Comfortably Numb.
I thought that putting an entire album in the Pantheon was definitely unique, but this is a unique album. But it was being a stretch.
Yeah.
But you've given me a good enough reason, and if you're comfortable with that and you want to, if you sat with it and you've.
If there wasn't a song in there that I really wished would be over as soon as it started, then I would.
Then that's fair.
Right.
Then that's fair. Okay.
What's yours? What is your most hated?
I don't like Hey You.
Hey You, out there on your own, sitting naked by the phone, would you touch me? Hey You, with your ear against the wall, waiting for someone to call out, would you?
I just don't like it. I don't know why it gets airplay. I don't like it. Never got to me.
That's funny. I never really had an opinion on this song. I don't say that I loved it or liked it even. I didn't hate it. It was just sort of, you know.
I mean, I had to search for one I didn't like.
Yeah.
You know, because there's all this stuff that we've mentioned. Like, I didn't even listen to Animals, so I can't tell you I hate a song off Animals because I don't listen to it.
Right.
And all the other stuff that I'm not interested in from 63 to 72 also, I'm not interested in. There's other stuff on, like, I don't know, like maybe The Wall, there's a couple of, like, Another Brick in the Wall. There's four or five different versions of that song, or four or five different, you know, runs of that song. I don't mind it. It's fine. I like it. I like that song. But I mean, Hey You just kind of sticks out as, like, I don't, Hey You. It's enough. Right? So if you had you gotta need one that I hate, that's the one.
That's good. All right. Coolest 4 seconds. Boy,
there's a ton of them.
I had a really extensive list here that I finally paired all that, you know, paired.
You wanna, but what do you got? You got four?
I got four.
Oh, you got four?
Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
I got four. If you got four, that's cool. I mean, this is a band that had a lot of them. We may snipe each other a bit here too. There's a section off the song Not Now John, which is off of the album Final Cut, which was like
their last one.
It was their last one with Waters. Yeah. And there's a portion of the song where the backing vocals are fuck all that. And it's just it's just fucking great.
Yeah, I
just love the fact that they walked that out. And this was 1983. So 1983. This wasn't 2020 where you can kind of drop something like that without too big of a deal. They ran.
It's like singing like fuck all that.
It's women vocalists and they're doing this kind of like swing sort of beat. Mm-hmm. It's great. I love that.
The run up into the verse of Time. The drum drop, and then right as it goes into the first lyrics, like the ticking away,
right,
like that right there, the run up there, just, and when you're just waiting for it, and also when the drum hit and then it hits the snare and then he starts singing, it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's fucking cool.
Launch Me.
Yeah,
yeah,
because he yells the lyrics.
Yeah,
like, ticking away, it's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. In Another Brick in the Wall Part One, there's a drum roll out into heavy guitars that you're coming from the song Thin Ice. and there's this underlying guitar riff. It's really, really good. I really dig that.
That's cool. I like the opening guitar, and I don't know if it's a guitar or if it's a bass on Have a Cigar. It's such a cool sounding, like almost slapping that bass
yeah.
and sliding it up at the same time. It's just like such a cool fucking song.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
an awesome song. I love that song.
That's great tune.
But the intro, like the beginning of that is like really cool.
Yeah. Cool. Going back to another brick on the ball. Ugh.
I like it.
Going back.
Another brick on your balls. It's a different type of album.
It's a very different podcast. It's a
different type of struggle.
Going back to another brick in the wall, part one, they're running along with these pretty steady kind of guitar accents. And then there's a heavy guitar hit, after which Waters yells, "Daddy, what did you leave behind for me?
Daddy, what else did you leave for me?"
And the power of his vocals on that, and the just the do of the guitar, very cool stuff.
Yeah, I've already talked about this, but in Learning to Fly, the interlude and the interlude to the chorus. And the one line that I always like hung on to that for that chorus is like when I want to say it's like punching a hole through the roof of the sky.
Wow!
I just thought that was such a cool envisioning of that. That's really awesome.
Right. For my last one, in the song Money, the majority of that song is written in 7/8 time. And we've talked a little bit about time signatures in other episodes. And I was thinking about like a way to explain a time signature that's a little less technical. So if you listen to the song Money, there's a repeating bass riff and it runs throughout just about all of the verses. And if you count every time Waters plays a note, by the time he ends that riff, before he goes back to start it over again, you'll count to 7. And so that's the definition, really, of that kind of a time signature. You're not in an even number, you're in an odd number. You know, if it was 4/4 time, it would sound a little more
balanced.
Balanced. If it was 3/3 time, then it would sound like a waltz. So that song is in 7/8 time, and then they get into the guitar solo, and they drop it into 4/4 time. And it's this sort of like, oh yeah. Just feel this.
That's the rock and roll four on the floor.
Yeah. Right. You just feel this shift and you're like, yeah, that's where it's at. And of course they do it with a, you know, a heavy guitar sound.
And a raspy sax solo.
Yeah, there is a raspy sax.
That's cool. And I like all of Eclipse, the last 2 minutes of Dark Side. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in June, and the sun is eclipsed by the moon. Yeah. Just, that is kind of like the punctuation. Like, of all that stuff. Like, right. All you create, all you destroy. It's just...
Yeah.
Just a great way to end such a great message to a great album.
Yeah.
It's just...
Also very grandiose. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And then I'll see you on the dark side of the moon. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
This is great.
All right, Sisters of Mercy.
Yeah, I kind of went away from Pink Floyd for a while there. And even like Momentary Lapse of Reason, I forgot how fucking awesome that album is. That Dogs of War is great.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
I had the drums in Dogs of War halfway through where they go into the drum drop.
Yeah.
I had that as part of a best 4 second too. Maybe we'll drop that in here.
Yeah, they deserve a lot more space in my playlist.
I agree. Sure. I agree. I had I've got sort of and that's why I've got stuff like off of Metal and Animals on my top five, because the songs that we knew so much, that everybody knows so much,
Wish You Were Here.
Wish You Were Here and Comfortably Numb and Shine On You Crazy Diamond, which, again, fantastic live.
Sure.
They are unbelievable songs. Everything off of Dark Side, just about everything off of Dark Side, all the shit off of The Wall, incredible songs. But that's why those songs didn't make it into my top list, because I had just killed them.
Yeah.
I just absolutely killed them. What I did discover was a renewed appreciation for Momentary Lapse.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to spin that from T to B. Fruit to Root, was that it?
From Root to Fruit.
Root to Fruit.
All right, let's do our rankings here.
And get who's your MVP?
Oh, my MVP. Shit, I didn't even think about
it. We can do it quick because we are running long.
Yeah. You got an MVP?
I've got an MVP.
Go for it.
I have a feeling that we are probably going to counter each other on this. You look at everything that, as I listened to their catalog from start to finish, there was a point at which I started liking them more, and there were songs on albums that I liked more than others. For the most part, those songs were either written or co-written by Gilmour. And David Gilmour is, hands down, my absolute favorite guitarist ever.
Yeah.
And so I have to give this to Gilmour. And I know that Waters was a huge, huge contributor to this. And I absolutely give him his due. But for me, it's Gilmour.
Yeah, and I think that, this might be the first time that we land on the same kind of MVP. Because I agree, David Gilmour is the MVP of this band. Because he runs through from 67 all the way through. But I do have to give it to Roger Waters. Concept albums usually do not attract large audiences.
Right.
Largely because...
they're concept albums.
They're not good.
Yeah.
This motherfucker, that's all he does is write concept albums, and it's extraordinarily difficult, and he's pulled it off in...
spades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Dark Side, Wish You Were Here, Animals, The Wall, and Radio Chaos. I mean, that's five. That's crazy.
Right.
That's crazy to base a career on that. Saying all that, David Gilmour, absolutely. Yeah. He's just, you can tell, he's just the musical kind of like propulsion through that, and his voice is spot on. I just love his voice. I like Waters, but Gilmour's tonality is really, really cool looking.
And
he's in the top three greatest guitarists.
All right, that brings us to our rankings. For talent, I got to give these guys a five. I've got to give them a five.
Yeah.
I think between the musicianship, the the vocal characteristics, the everything else, the songwriting.
It was really easy for them to just be totally self-indulgent and just shit the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And they just didn't.
Yeah.
Because their talent was just wouldn't let them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm fine with a 5.
Okay. The catalog, I'm going to go with a 4.2. I think their very early stuff was very dated. One thing I was happy to see was I didn't feel like they really started to overstretch. You know, like Division Bell was a quality album. You know, sometimes you see these bands put out albums and you're like, geez, you really didn't need to drop that last couple.
Right. Yeah, I had their catalog at a 4.2.
Okay. A 4 as well or a 4.2?
No, a 4 as well.
Gotcha.
I had a 4.
Okay. Image.
The coolness factor.
Image and coolness factor.
Yeah, man.
You know what?
Who the fuck doesn't like Pink Floyd?
I never thought of these guys as nerds. Now, none of them are, you know, terribly handsome.
And that's the thing. It's a prog rock band.
It's a prog rock band.
It's like, it's completely counter, you know, antithetical to everything that I like.
Yeah. I gave him a 3.8.
David Gilmour's a rock star.
Yeah.
I look at him, I'm like, I would be anything, do anything to be him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
To play like that.
Yeah.
And have, you know, it's
freaking. And have those pipes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I get their coolness factor out of 4.
Okay, we're pretty close. All right, we have prattled on long enough. Thank you for sticking with us.
Yeah, man, this was fun.
This was good. If you are on iTunes, hey, everybody tells you to like rank your podcasts, and apparently that does something good for us, so I don't know what that is, but if you could...
Bang on that 4-star button.
Yeah, give us as many stars as you can. Give us 15 stars. 15 stars and a review. Because we'll check them out anyhow, because we'd like to read them. But you can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and leave us a voicemail if you want. Go to Google Anchor Podcast, and you'll find us on there somewhere. Thanks for listening, and we'll come back at you here soon.